Hi everyone, and welcome to Bold and Blissful Woman, how to connect with your feminine essence to create extraordinary life and love you desire. Today, my name is Nicole Williams, and today we have a very special guest. Her name is Michelle Martin-Jensen, and I'm very excited to have her here because she's an expert on how to create interaction and commitment with a man, which is today's topic. And I wanted to first welcome you. I am very excited about this interview. Would you like to share a little bit about your story, how you got here, and a little bit about what you do?
Yeah, thank you, Nicole, and thank you for the invitation of being here. And so happy to be with each of you, and thank you for joining us as well. So my own story is really how I made my way into the work that I now do. I met and married my husband after a very long and winding journey to love at age 43 and became an ecstatic first-time bride at age 43. We've now been married for 9 years, so I'm 52 if you're doing the math. I'm proud to be 52 because I also am a breast cancer survivor, and I value every birthday and every moment of life now. So I'm very passionate because of my own long and winding journey to love, which I'll share a little bit about in the context of our conversation today. I'm very passionate about helping other women remove and move through their inner obstacles to love, because I really believe that attracting love really begins on the inside out, and being able to create that possibility for having the kind of relationship that they've always dreamed of with a man that loves, cherishes, and adores them, someone that they can respect, admire, and trust. And that's really what I'm so passionate about and so honored to do in the world. And I just feel like it's such a blessing and such a gift. I spent over 20 years in corporate America in some very high-level positions prior to finding my way to this work, but I've never been able to do something that felt so beautiful and so heart-centered and brings me such joy as I help other women and support them on their journey. So that's just a little tiny bit about me, and we'll weave a little more of my story into our conversation. I used to joke around because I was single for so long and had so many challenges and ups and downs and heartaches and disappointments. I used to say that I was going to write a book called Dating for Decades, chronicling all of those experiences and mishaps and disasters. And at one point I thought it might be like a 26-volume set, like the Encyclopedia Britannica. So we could tell my stories all day, but we'll get into the juicy stuff that we want to talk about.
I love everything you just shared. And it's very fascinating, and I think that I would like to start there. Like, you had a very positive view on dating no matter what. Like, even if you joked about it, I'm sure that there were moments where you felt let down and everything, but you always got up and you continued to go there. Can you share why, or like, what was the vision that helped you move forward and not give up?
Yeah, well, the truth is there were times that on my journey when I was very discouraged about it and disheartened and almost did give up. There was like a little candle of hope within me that never completely went out, but I'll say that there were times that it got very dim. And I believe that's the case for many women. I think we sometimes go in cycles where we say, okay, I'm going to be really intentional about my love life. And then we kind of go for it for a while in terms of the outward things that we think we're supposed to be doing in order to try to meet someone, etc. And those things can be valuable, but unless the inner work is cleared, they don't always work. They typically don't work. And so I would go through this cycle where I would be very intentional for a while, then I would have a disappointment or a heartbreak, then I'd become a bit angry or disappointed or upset, and I might say to myself, well, fine, I'm just not going to care about this anymore. I would feel a bit of apathy for a period of time. And then I might even feel a little bit of anger because I thought, how is it that I can be so successful in so many other areas of my life and yet I can feel so stuck here? And so I would go through a cycle, and then something would rise up inside of me. And I had a couple of very profound experiences with this where I thought I had kind of stopped caring about it for a while. But this desire would rise up inside of me inevitably. you know, during this cycle that I'm talking about, and I would realize how deep it was of a desire for me to have that kind of love, to have that kind of experience of loving and being loved by someone in a deep, committed way. And truthfully, it's been one of the greatest gifts of my life, and perhaps I treasure it and value it more as a result of this journey that I've been through. But if we're being really honest, Nicole, there were times when that hope and that positivity that you're sensing, you know, it's easier in hindsight now, I can look back on it, but when I was going through it, there were times when that candle of hope burned very, very dim. And yet, even if you have that candle burning very, very dim, that flame can ignite again. And I think it's really important if this kind of love that we're talking about is something that you desire in your life, to continue to have that hope. So I could say a little more about that, but I know we have other areas we want to explore.
I wanted to ask you a small question here. Throughout those moments, were you supported? Like when, you know, that candle was getting dimmer, like were you getting support? Because for me personally, I know that I wanted love. I know that it took me years to move from being on the stage of unrequited love. Like I would like a guy and he wouldn't be interested. Years and years, the same situation. I wouldn't even be asked out on dates. And I noticed a shift in my energy and, you know, in keeping that hope high when I started to get myself supported, when I started to join summits, when I started to, you know, get my own coach and all that sort of stuff. Like, were you supported?
You know, I wasn't through the majority of my journey, but for me, a real turning point was when I turned 40. And when I turned 40 and I was still single and I was in the midst of having a very successful career in corporate America, it occurred to me that what I was doing wasn't working. I'm like, it's not like I haven't given it a fair shot here, right? Yeah. And this was really the first time where I thought, I really need some support in this area of my life. Because I was one of these very strong, independent women that thought, oh, I can figure this out. You know, there's absolutely no reason why I can't figure this out. And I had started a journey of self-discovery, and this is kind of indirect support. Prior to turning 40, I had really started discovering some things. I started reading a lot of relationship books on relationships, dating, communication, differences between men and women. And in fact, over about an 18-month period of time, I actually read like 125 books. I know that sounds crazy, but there was something that was starting to open up inside of me where I began to recognize there were obviously blocks or blind spots or things that I couldn't see that were preventing me from moving forward to having the kind of relationship I really desired. And I began to get little insights into some of those things through some of these books. I mean, typically I would pick up something in each one of these books that helped me a lot. However, that was a slow and winding process. So once I turned 40 and I thought, wow, I really want this for my life and I'm 40, which is a big birthday whether you're married or single, or in a relationship or not, I thought, I am going to seek out the kind of support that I can get. And even, you know, back then, so that's been about 12 years ago, there wasn't the level of support that's now so readily available in terms of summits and that sort of thing. But I did start to get, it wasn't as, you know, prevalent as it is now, but I did at that point seek out teachers and mentors and people that could help me from a variety of different schools of thought and in different areas of expertise. And what I discovered is that I actually had blind spots that I hadn't seen before. It's kind of like the way I describe it, Nicole, is we look in the mirror every day and we see our reflection, and we think we see ourselves very clearly. But the difference is when you get support, you also start seeing the side views and the back view like you would if you were in a 360 mirror in the department store. And as you know, when we're looking at our behind in those mirrors, sometimes that's not our favorite place to be. And yet, it's only by seeing what's there and acknowledging the truth that we can begin to move through them. And so for me, when I did seek support from different mentors and teachers and coaches, then I was able to move more quickly through these obstacles and blocks, which I like to call self-sabotaging thoughts and behavior. And then I began to realize all the different ways that I had been sabotaging myself without even realizing it. But I hadn't seen that before. And so I wished I'd have had the wisdom to get advice earlier, and to get support earlier. But the truth is, I was thinking, oh, I can figure this out. I'm figuring everything else out in my life. I'm doing just great. How hard can this be? That was kind of the mental concept that I had in my mind. And so it wasn't until I had that big pivotal birthday that I thought, I'm not going to leave any stone unturned here. I really want this and desire this for my life. And I'm going to do everything that I can to figure out what's standing in my way.
You know, I love that response. And what, you know, stayed with me more than anything were like the 120 books. And it just shows that you are very clear on your desire. And I love that, because sometimes, like, when we are ready for love, like, we will do a lot of things that for others might seem crazy, but it just speaks very highly of your desire. So I love that. A thing that I wanted to talk about, especially when you go through long periods of being single, like especially in my case, and I've seen it a lot with my clients, is that, you know, they have no previous reference of being liked, desired, or wanted by a man. They want to move forward in this path of love, but they are faced with so much fears of, you know, unrequited love, rejection. What advice do you have for women who have been there, who have no previous reference, to start really going into the path of, you know, finding love and just removing those fears from their minds?
Yeah, it's a really, really good question, and it does come up for a lot of women. At least most women that are single for any period of time might have what we might call a dry spell, right? Or, like you're saying, they may never have really experienced love in the way that they desire. And whether it's a dry spell or whether it's never having that experience at all, I think the first place to begin is analyzing. And you probably would need to get support for this, because, like I said, we think we see ourselves, but we don't. But it's really taking a look at what I like to call these internal blocks. And what I find that for most women, it begins with self-love and placing an incredibly high value upon yourself, which is why I often say that we attract love from the inside out. It's an inside out process. So what I mean by this is, you can go out there and you can have the perfect dating profile, and you can be going out socially and trying to create possibilities of meeting someone. But if you have the internal stuff going on that's blocking you, and some of the ways that shows up, I'll tell you in just a minute. If you have the internal things that are blocking you, then it may not matter so much what you're doing in your outer world, because there are going to be blocks in your inner, inside of yourself, which can prevent you from attracting love. And I know that I thought I was open and ready for a relationship, the kind of lasting, deep, soulmate kind of love that I'd always desired, long before I found it. But the truth is, I really wasn't. I had some internal blocks. And some of the ways those show up, I like to call them the three F words. Don't worry, I'm not going to be profane here. But you mentioned one of them already, which is fear. So we have so many fears. It would be, you know, we could sit here and try to articulate them all and spend the rest of our conversation just on that. But fear shows up in so many different ways. The fear of the rejection, fear of not being able to find the kind of man that we want, or fear that all the good ones are taken, or fear of not being lovable on some level. We don't necessarily feel like we're worthy of being loved by the kind of person that we want, or fear of losing our independence or our strength. That shows up a lot for women that are successful in their careers or other areas of their lives. We think we want a relationship, but in reality, we're kind of scared of it too, because we don't want to lose that independence or that autonomy. So there's actually some ambivalence going on. That showed up for me, and I didn't even realize that was there until I got into my journey. I had worked really hard to be the woman that I was and to have the accomplishments that I did, and by darn, I wasn't going to let any man trap me or take that away from me. And I wasn't consciously thinking that, but it was there underneath the surface, right? So those are some examples of fears. The second F word is fantasies. So when you speak about unrequited love, what sometimes happens too is we're in a bit of fantasy land, thinking that it's going to work out maybe with a certain guy who maybe hasn't asked us out, or maybe we've gone out with him a time or two and we think, you know, all we've got to do is let him see enough of us or give enough to him or be more than we think we already are or impress him in certain ways, and then he'll get the idea and he'll love us and he'll want us. And I spent over 10 years of my life in a relationship that I'd like to say was unrequited love, because I really, really loved this man. But I was like in this process of trying to earn his love or impress him or give so much to him that he would love me back. And while he did have feelings for me, they were more like friendship type feelings. And yet I invested 10 years of my life thinking if I just did enough of this or that or the other, then he would eventually come around and want to be with me. Well, that never happened. And even though he's someone that I care deeply about even now, you know, he wasn't in a position where he could give me what I deeply wanted. And I was going about it in the wrong way by overgiving, trying too hard to impress him, trying to be irreplaceable in his life, trying to do all these things that I thought would make him love me. And we can be in a place of fantasy where we're not willing to really look at the truth for what it is. And a lot of women can lose a lot of precious time in that. Another fantasy can be thinking that love is just going to happen, like the UPS guy is going to show up at our door today and he's going to be the right guy. And I do believe that we have to focus on this inner clearing and this inner work, but we also have to create what I like to call intention around what we want and desire in our lives. And I think there's a really important distinction to make here, and that is that it's different to be intentional in your love life than it is to be desperate. We're not talking about a desperate, frantic, panicky approach. We're just talking about creating intention around creating opportunities for yourself and looking at the ways that you can do that in a graceful way, but still maybe have to stretch yourself just a little bit from your regular routine or comfort zone. So fantasies, that's the second one. And then the third F word that shows up a lot is falsehoods. So those are lies we believe about ourselves. Sometimes we all have this inner voice or this inner critic that says things, you're too old, you're too fat, you're not enough this, you're not enough that. All the good ones are taken. There's no good men in this town. Etc. We could go on and on with these, but you get the idea. And if we're seeing this through this prism, if we're seeing men and we're seeing the possibilities in our lives through this prism, what tends to happen is what I call confirmation bias. We tend to find things, we collect evidence to confirm our beliefs or our bias, and then that becomes our reality, at least for that time. We can't see beyond these limiting beliefs. And so the fears, the fantasies, and the falsehoods that show up can be an incredible block, and they can make it so a woman, although she feels like she's open and ready for love, they can be enough of an obstacle that she may not be attracting men, or she may not be getting asked out, or she may not be really fully present in the way that she thinks she is in terms of being available for a relationship. And those internal blocks can keep us single for a very long time, because energetically, even though we don't necessarily know this is going on, because a lot of this is like an operating system in a computer, it's kind of underneath the surface sometimes, that those internal blocks can keep us from meeting someone, even if we think we're doing all the right things on the outside. So that's just one little piece of advice as far as a place to start. And we talked about hope already, and I always say the way through these F words is with another F word, and that's with faith. But the faith has to be based on a foundation and a plan, meaning that I do believe you want to create intention about this, intention about getting support, intention about creating opportunities for yourself, and doing this while also doing this inner work. I don't think we have to be perfectly clear and have all our inner work done before we can attract love, or truthfully speaking, none of us would ever attract love. But I do think that having a greater awareness and being in a process of moving through those things can greatly enhance a woman's opportunities.
I love that.
I love that.
A thing that I wanted to ask you is, you know, throughout the dating process, how does a woman identify that a man has actually romantic feelings for her and doesn't necessarily see her as a friend? How can she look out for certain things that will avoid or, like, avoid the heartache, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a very good question, because women want to be available for a relationship, but they also want to know that the man is going to be there for them and is going to step up if they're wanting that kind of a relationship. So before I answer some of the ways that you can tell, I'd like to just back up just for a second and say a couple of things first. Is that okay?
Yes.
Okay, so first of all, I think it begins with you being really clear about what it is you want and having clarity for that, and also having a commitment to yourself that you're going to honor what you really want and not settle for less than what you deserve and what you really want. Because what often happens is that we might meet someone and there are some signals that maybe he's not fully there for you, and yet we can choose to ignore those and think, kind of like I did with the man that I told you I invested a 10 years of my life into, we can think, well, you know, he'll have this opportunity to get to know me better. He'll see what an amazing woman I am. He'll change his mind, kind of thing. We can choose to believe that, or we can choose to believe, okay, he's probably not really the man that I want, but he's shown up right now and he's interested in me, and so I'm going to just go with this for a while and I'll settle for Mr. Right now, just until Mr. Right shows up. But what often happens is we believe this is going to be a short detour, but often women end up investing years and years and years of their lives into something that is less than what they want. When I say less than, I mean less than what you want in terms of a commitment level and how that man is showing up for you. So in terms of your question, so it all starts with you having that clarity and that commitment to yourself. And in terms of things that you can look for in terms of how a man shows up and how he presents himself and some of the early signs, there are typically a lot of them there. And I'll share with you some of those in just a moment. But one thing that I've noticed in speaking with so many women over the years is that when they might tell me a story of where they had become involved with a man and then the man doesn't commit, for example, I'll often, and they are in heartbreak and disappointment over this because they've invested so much of their heart and their love and their intention and energy around this, I'll often ask them, okay, looking back on it now, can you see that there were any red flags, or did you have any uneasy feelings inside in terms of maybe this isn't going to quite work? And in almost every case, Nicole, they tell me yes, but they chose to ignore that or push it down or just set it aside thinking that it didn't really matter. And they oftentimes have made excuses for the man. Well, he just got out of a divorce and he just needs a little bit more time. Or, you know, he just doesn't know me well enough to know how amazing I am. But the truth is, they do typically give us signals and signs. And if we're aware of them, then we can avoid some of that disappointment. So the first thing is, I want you to approach any new opportunity with a relationship from a place of what I like to call curiosity and observation. So even if you're really attracted to a man, you need to know his heart and his character and his intentions in terms of his life plan and his relationship before you fully give your heart or your body or become too involved with him. So I'm a really big fan of what I like to call having a woman kind of lean back. So what that means is, instead of you being the one that's trying so hard to think, is he that into me, and is he really that attracted to me, and does he want to be with me? You have the opportunity to approach this from a place of curiosity and observation, where you're asking those questions about him. Is he the kind of man that could show up for me in the way that I would really like to have someone in my life? And what do I know about this man and his character? And so sometimes this means, even if there's a lot of attraction from a physical standpoint, to slow things down and give yourself a chance to really pay attention to who he is. That's one tip. But in terms of some of the signs they give, a lot of times men will actually say things like, I'm not really sure I'm ready for a committed relationship yet, or I just, you know, wrapped up another relationship, whether it's divorce or a breakup or whatever. I need a little time to explore. So sometimes they'll actually verbally say those things. And if we get into the fantasy mode, we can believe that, well, that's what he's saying, but that's not really what's going to happen. You know, he hasn't met me yet, and he doesn't know how amazing I am. But a lot of times they'll tell us, and then we'll still be surprised and shocked when he stands by what he originally said and shows up in that way. The other thing is that a man, if he is in a situation where he's intentional about creating a deep, lasting, committed relationship with a woman, he's going to be very aware of having his actions and his words be consistent. So in other words, he's not going to make a lot of promises to you and then not deliver on them. So there's a lot of men out there, particularly those that are a little bit more suave and sophisticated when it comes to women, who are good at verbally saying what they think a woman wants to hear or making a woman feel really good, but then their actions don't always back that up. So consistency in words and actions are a big sign early on in a relationship. And that's something that you can look for. And then I also think it's really important to pay attention just to how he treats you in general. Because if a man has an intention of creating a relationship with a woman, he's going to be very aware of how he treats you. He's going to want you to see him in a positive light. He's going to want to bring his best game, so to speak. He's going to want to show up and be present for you. And he will also, once you've dated for a while, he'll also start including you in his conversations about future plans. You'll start to see an integration of him inviting you to things or introducing you to friends or people that matter to him. In other words, he's going to start integrating you gradually into his life if the relationship has time to develop that far. So those are some of the things that you can pay attention to. And then you also want to know a little bit about a man. Not that this is, you're not drilling him like an interview on a first date, but you do want to know a little bit about a man's history, because a lot of people do repeat patterns in their relationships. And so if, for example, he has a string of bad relationships and he's talking about how terrible all these women are, you know, that's an example of a red flag, because a man that's self-aware is going to be saying, you know what, part of this really might be me. I'm the common denominator here. So those are just a few things that you can look for in the early stages, but it all starts with you having that clarity and commitment to yourself and knowing exactly what you want and not being willing to sell yourself short. What I see a lot of women doing is what I like to call settling for scraps from the table instead of being seated at the banquet. And I believe you deserve to be seated at the banquet and enjoying the full feast, not just whatever little scraps a certain man might have to give to you.
I love that. Personally speaking, everything started to shift for me when I started to see myself as the prize, right? Instead of being all out, how can I get him to like me? Here I am. Just the act of, as you said, leaning back and seeing, you know, like what this guy actually or man has to offer, you know, to this potential relationship, that shifted a lot of things for me. So can you talk a little bit about why you deserve to be at the banquet? just to reframe that. Sometimes when I first explain this to my clients that they are the prize, they feel kind of put off, like, well, am I the prize and what does that make him? And I was like, it's not about that. It's just about connecting truly with what you truly have to offer and allowing yourself to receive instead of giving so much without seeing anything in return. So if you could explain that, like, I appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm so glad you asked this question because I love this topic. So here's the really cool thing about this, Nicole, is when we do lean back, and when I say lean back, I'm talking both literally and figuratively. What we're doing is we're creating an opening, or we're creating a space for a man to step into. So what I mean by that is if you're giving a lot, or if you're getting into the role of pursuing or working so hard to make him like you, or what I like to say, giving too fast, too soon, whether that be sex or whether that be your heart or whether that be all of your time and energy, if you're giving too much too soon and you're kind of getting into that more masculine energy, which is doing, masculine energy is doing, feminine energy is being, in a very simplistic way of saying it, then what you're doing is you're taking away that space. That space is no longer there because you're filling it with all the stuff you're doing. But if you create that space, that creates an opening for a man by choice to say, I want to step into this space and I want to be there for this woman. I want to see her. I want to invest in getting to know her. I want to do things for her to show what I have to bring to the table. And here's the really cool part about it. When we do that, that is how a man is able to get in touch with his masculine energy, and that actually makes a man feel really good. And it's actually one of the catalysts for how a man falls in love with a woman. And so the really cool thing about it is that if we can relax and if we can lean back and allow for that space, then the right man is going to be able to step into that space, and it's going to bring him satisfaction and joy because he's going to feel his masculine energy, which makes him feel good. See, this is one of the nuances of differences between men and women, and of course I'm speaking in general terms here, but one of the key differences is that we don't necessarily fall in love the same way. And men actually fall in love by doing and by giving and by investing. And when I say investing, I'm not just talking financially. I'm talking investment of his time and his energy and of the things that he wants to do for you. And if you can look at it that way, it makes it easier for you to graciously receive. That's the term I like to use, graciously receive. It's like you... if you recognize that you're going to bring him satisfaction and he's going to feel good and you are giving to him in a different way than you might be inclined to give to him by just graciously receiving the gifts that he has to offer, by noticing what he does for you, by thanking him for what he does for you, by complimenting him, by asking his advice, by asking, you know, by acknowledging his areas of expertise. Those kinds of things make a man feel really good. They make him feel like a man. And when we're trying to create a loving relationship, a romantic relationship, it allows him to step into it by choice, and you get the satisfaction of knowing that he chose to be with you. So you are the prize, meaning that he gets that opportunity to step in and claim that prize by choice, and you get to choose whether you want to be with him. And it tends to create this wonderful, romantic, synergistic experience that doesn't happen if we get so anxious or we try too hard to impress or we try to overgive. And why you deserve to be seated at the banquet is because, first of all, you are a very high value woman and you place that value upon yourself. We teach other people how to treat us. That's a Dr. Phil quote, so I can't claim it for myself. But we do teach people how to treat us by how we, what level of value we place upon ourselves. And that all starts internally. And that foundational piece, when that's really strong, it's amazing how a lot of men will step up and rise to that level of what our belief system is, of what we believe we deserve. So why you deserve to be seated at the banquet and enjoying the full feast is you're a high-value woman, and you're also going to bring the man that you want to have this relationship with, assuming he's the right man and he's ready for a relationship, you're going to bring him a lot of satisfaction as he gets the joy of watching you enjoy the feast, right? See, he's going to actually love watching you enjoy every delicious morsel of this feast. That's going to make him feel really good. In fact, it's so funny, if I can just add a tiny little caveat before we wrap up on this. When I was interviewing John Gray for my summit, actually, last January, one of the things we talked about was he was talking about how if a couple of women go to a restaurant, let's just say it's a Mexican restaurant, for example, and let's just say the beans are too salty. Mm-hmm. The women might sit around, three or four women might sit around and say, oh, these beans are too salty. I'm never coming here again. This restaurant has really gone downhill. You know, this might be the kind of conversation we might have. And we would think nothing of it. But what John said, and I think this really illustrates this point, is he said, if a man were to take a woman to the restaurant and she were to say to him, wow, this restaurant has really gone downhill. These beans are too salty. I'm never coming here again. In the man's mind, he's saying, oh no, she doesn't like my beans. These are my beans. I worked on these beans, and now she doesn't like my beans, and she thinks this is terrible. In other words, this is a kind of an opposite example of what I'm talking about. In this case, he's feeling really badly because the experience he tried to provide for her didn't go as well as he hoped. But on the opposite end, if you're at the banquet feast, or you're out to eat, or whatever, and you can find something to compliment and appreciate and acknowledge, it's going to be, to him, he's going to hear it like, wow, she likes my beans. Wow, she really likes what I made here. Wow, I really, really hit the ball out of the park. He's going to get satisfaction from that. So it really creates this beautiful win-win kind of synergy. And I love it. I just think it's really delicious. And even those of us that have been out there in corporate America and might get more in our masculine energy when it comes to our work lives, if we can get into that more relaxed, lean back, light, playful, not so focused on the outcome, but enjoying being in the moment and just allow things to evolve in a natural, graceful way, it can really create a whole new experience for how we show up and how we experience our dates and men and dating.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Here's the thing. I noticed that sometimes when you are in corporate America, you are used to being in your masculine while you're at work. And there's a very different way when you're communicating with a man when you're in your feminine in a day. Like, what happens when, like, you're just coming home from work, you have a date, how do you shift that energy? And what are the subtle ways or changes that occur when you're communicating with a man in a date while you're in your feminine? Instead of saying, well, I want this, I desire this to be this way, well, in a way that's kind of like defensive sometimes. I've heard this from men that they felt attacked by women sometimes in dates where, you know, she communicates in a certain way that's kind of like off-putting to them. So if you could talk a little bit about that, that would be great.
Yeah, so I think you've asked me a couple of questions here. The first is kind of how do we shift from that masculine energy like we have at work. And so I'll just touch on that. There's so much I could say about this, but just a couple of quick things that might be helpful. I do think that it's really nice if you have a date after a work day, if you can have a little bit of space and time in between, like maybe not meet the guy right after work, if possible. Because for me, having spent 20 plus years in corporate America, I did find that I needed a little bit of space and time to kind of just be able to relax and decompress and be out of that very intense mode that I might have been in my job. One of the ways that I would do this is I would actually physically change into something maybe a little softer, a little bit more feminine, and then I would actually put on music and I would dance around the room, you know, put on some music that really makes you want to swing your hips and move, because I find by kind of shaking it up with our physiology, it has a way of kind of shifting us into that more playful light. We're not so heavy or thinking about so much the demands of the work or what comes next like we might be in our jobs. Just being in that state of just dancing and moving your body and swinging your hips a little bit. You know, I lived alone as a single woman, so I would just dance up a storm all over the house, and I'm sure I looked ridiculous at sometimes, but it did help me to just kind of shift into that lightness and that more joyful energy, so that when I went out on a date, I was a little bit more relaxed and a little bit looser in terms of letting go of kind of the demands or the stress or the anxiety that might have come through the day. So that's just a little quick tip. If you have a little bit more time, it can be nice to even take a bubble bath. If you enjoy that, listen to a little bit of nice music, you know, go on a little walk or something that just, I just find getting your physiology moving and, you know, being aware, having kind of some body awareness can help shift out of like what's going on up here. Mm-hmm. So that's just a real quick tip. So we could talk about that for a long time, but I want to make sure I can answer your other question. So one of the things that I like to say that you can use as a guideline is in our professional lives, sometimes our requests are more direct and what I like to call instructional, right? And what I like to say is you can let a man know your wants and needs or preferences. In fact, I think it's a really good thing to do because, again, that creates that space for him to step into it. But you can do it in a very invitational way. So the key is we want to make these requests or speak in terms of an invitational, invitational approach rather than from an instructional approach. So, for example, you know, he might say to you, I'm just going to try to give you a quick example. He might say to you, well, I had in mind to take us to this steakhouse tonight. And let's just say you're a vegetarian and you really prefer to go somewhere else. I'm just giving an example here. So you might say, you know, I really like that you thought about in advance and made a plan. I have to tell you, I'm really, really craving something really healthy, something kind of in the vegetarian zone. And I'm wondering about such and such a restaurant. Would you be open to taking me there? I'd really enjoy that. It's an invitational way of asking. You're not saying, well, I'm a vegetarian and I'm not going to a steak, I'm not going to a steak restaurant. You know, it's you can still let your wants and your preferences be known and make requests in an invitational way. And then a really nice thing to do, which goes along with this feminine grace piece, is if he does take you to the restaurant of your choice or accommodates your request, you can say something to him, you know, thank you so much. That really was perfect for me, and I especially enjoyed da-da-da. And like John Gray said, he's going to be thinking, wow, she really liked my food. I really did a good job. I really won here. And it allows him to say, wow, this is a woman that I can potentially please. Because he wants to know that he can win with you if he's really interested in you. He wants to know that he's going to be able to please you, that his efforts are going to be noticed. And even if he doesn't do it perfectly, like he might have chose the wrong restaurant to begin with, even if he doesn't do it perfectly, he knows that it's safe for him to try to provide an experience for you or an opportunity for you, and that you're going to appreciate and acknowledge his gifts and what he has to offer. So that's one example. And another thing that you can do is just have an opportunity for a man to present himself. What happens a lot of times in early dates is we're both nervous, right? And we're both trying to impress each other. And sometimes because we want the man to be so impressed with us, because we want him to like us, if it's someone we're interested in, it almost can get into a conversation that seems almost competitive. And what I like to say is you're complimentary, but you're not competing with a man that you want to have a romantic relationship with. You might be competing with men in the workplace, but if you want to have a romantic relationship with a man, it tends to work much more, it tends to be much more conducive to romantic feelings to be in a complimentary space rather than a competitive space. So if a man's on a first date and he's sharing things about himself that might even seem like he's bragging, instead of you saying, well, I did this or I did that, or, you know, kind of trying to match him, allow him to shine a little bit and take that as a compliment that he's wanting you to be impressed with him and his knowledge and his accomplishments. And I'm not talking about someone that's a constant braggart, but I'm talking about in those early stages where sometimes people are nervous and they want to show up and they want to put their best self forward. It would even be okay to give him a little gift of saying, wow, that's amazing, or how interesting that you've done that, and give him a little bit of a chance to shine, because you'll have your chance to shine. If a man gets to know you and invests in the relationship, he's likely going to have you up on a pedestal, and he's going to see all of the amazing attributes of you fully, both in your professional and your personal life. But you, if you're wanting to create an atmosphere for romance and love, you also want to present not just your strengths, but also some of your vulnerabilities and some of that softness. And so part of that is allowing a man to shine in certain ways. Give him some credit where he's due, where it may be due, and don't dismiss him because he might be wanting to impress you. That's actually a compliment, especially in the early stages. So those are a few little tips.
I love that. Like, it's very subtle, but it's very powerful as well, right? Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to talk about that because it's, you know, shedding some light on what the experience is for a man and how to show up in a different way, right? So more than anything, I want to thank you for this interview. This was amazing. We covered a lot, and it was very, 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 very insightful. I know that you have a gift for the viewers, so if you could talk a little bit about that, I know that it's going to be really helpful for them.
Yeah, and it's so great because this gift goes right along with our conversation today. You can get this gift by going to embraceyourfeminingrace.com. That's the link, and it's what I like to call a virtual gift bag. And so, you know, we all get the virtual swag bags at the makeup counters or that kind of thing. This is a virtual swag bag or gift bag. And I do have an audio recording of a webcast that I did called Be the One Woman, How to Be the Woman He Falls Madly in Love With. And I talk specifically about this area of feminine grace and how you can show up in the world and how you can be in relationship to a man, showing not just your strength, but that softness and being invitational, and some of the ways that you can femininely flirt or let a man know that you're interested in him. And then there's also an interview that my husband and I actually did together, which is kind of fascinating, where we talk about some of the deep wants and needs that men have in a relationship and how you can show up in ways where you still respect your wants and needs and your femininity and still respect yourself as a high value and prized woman, but you also understand a little bit more about what a man really wants and needs and how that might be different in terms of how they feel love and how they fall in love. So it's several things, and I think you'll really enjoy it if you've enjoyed the tone of this conversation, because we get a chance to take it deeper and further.
Definitely. Thank you so much once again. It sounds really good. And I just think that you provide such a beautiful insight on a man's perspective and how to communicate better with men. I think that's very beautiful.
Thank you very much, Nicole. My pleasure, and my pleasure to be with each of you.
Well, I hope you guys enjoyed this presentation, enjoy this interview, and make sure to check out Michelle's gift below, okay? So thank you once again. I will be talking soon.